Okay, we're holding by the Mishnah on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. The last Mishnah had talked about the mitzvah Piri Verivya, and we went through all the details of that, so now continuing on that topic. Mishnah says, Nasa Isha, a man marries a woman, Vishaya Ima Esa Shanim, and they remain married for 10 years, Velo Yoda, and she's not born any children, Einarashoi Levatel. He's no longer allowed to be Vatel the mitzvah Piri Verivya. Which means, Rashi says, it means that either he's going to have to divorce her or he's going to have to marry another wife. How this works out in practice nowadays, we'll talk about in a minute. Girusha, then the Mishnah continues, if he divorces her, Moteres Binasalacha, she's allowed to marry somebody else. You don't say necessarily that she is an Akara, that she's barren. It takes two to produce a child. You don't know whether it was from him or from her. V'rashoya Sheni L'shusima Yurchanim, and the second one can also remain married to her for 10 years. Imipila, if sometime during that 10 years she has a miscarriage, Moni Mishashi Pila, then the count restarts, the clock resets. You count from when she miscarried.
6 years she miscarried.
You start recounting from then, yeah. Now, how does this now? So first of all, so the poskim discuss in great detail to what extent this halacha, what are the various details about this halacha. For example, the Gemara is going to point out that we find that, where do we learn it from? We find that Avraham Avinu waited 10 years after he and Sarah had moved to Eretz Yisrael. He waited until he was 85, and then he married Hagar. So there are some of the posts who say, therefore, we see that the 10 years only applies in Eretz Yisrael. The Bechlal does not, or Zeruah, for example, says that the Bechlal does not apply in Chutzlaret. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with that. Because maybe this is because we see from Avraham. I mean, Avraham and Sarah have been married for many years before that, right? You know? And yet we're only counting 10 years from when they came to Eretz Yisrael. So the Urzarua says as a blanket statement that no, it does not apply to a couple in Chutzlaret. Most other Rishonim disagree with that, but some they say that the 10 years do apply in Chutzlaret, but do apply. But there are some Rishonim, I believe that Ramban says it, who says, on the other hand though, if the couple has been for a long time in Chutzlaret and then they move to Eretz Yisrael, then yes, the clock does reset. If they stay if they stay ongoing in Chutzlaret, then yeah, after 10 years you would say. But if they end up moving to Eretz Yisrael, then you reset the clock. Then there's also the question.
If they move back and forth,
I don't know. I mean, in those days it wasn't a realistic thing. How that would be nowadays, I don't know. There are other Rishonim who say that there are other Rishonim and Achronim who want to say that Bechlal, this whole concept of forcing them to get divorced after 10 years doesn't apply nowadays, partly because of these different opinions that it may only apply in Eretz Yisrael, partly because you never know who says necessarily that it's because she's barren, it might equally well be because he's incapable of having children, and then him divorcing her is not going to accomplish anything. So in practice, there are different opinions among the poskim. Whether the consensus of most poskim is that nowadays we don't force this kind of issue. The couple has been married for more than 10 years. They don't have children. You don't force them to get divorced. And because you have these various rules and leniencies and whatnot to rely on. And Lamaisa, you know, we know various couples who were married for many more than 10 years and never had children. The Rebbe and the Nevison being a prime example. And yeah, they remain married. There was also the question, Tosfos discusses the question this is actually more in the Gemara, when he divorces her, in what cases do we say he has to pay her ksuba and whatnot? That actually we'll get to in the Gemara.
Here it brings up some say that Rabbeinu's accusations apparently doesn't apply.
I was going to mention that, thank you, I'd forgotten about that. Yes, there are Rishonim, including Rabbeinu Yehuda, the son of the Rosh, quote, from Rabbeinu Gershom himself, that his takana was never meant to apply to such a case. So therefore, according to that, it would mean that if a person has not had children with his wife in 10 years, then he would be allowed, even under Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, to marry a second wife. However, many other Rishonim disagree with that, and the halacha in practice is not like that.
So he still cannot.
And since, on the other hand, Rabbeinu Gershom's takana is also you can't divorce a woman against her will. over here, I mean, if the halacha was they had to divorce, then Beis Din would force them to, and it wouldn't be a question of against her will. Beis Din would have to compel both of them to. But in practice, like I said, because of these various opinions of the Rishonim and Achronim, therefore in practice, in general, this sort of thing is not done nowadays.
Before Rabbi Gershom, he could divorce a woman against
her. Yeah.
Why he made it?
We talked about it. We talked about it a few weeks ago. Partly it was connected with the takana of not marrying another wife on top of your existing one. It was whatever. There was also a problem. There was a problem sometimes there where, and actually this problem goes back already to the times of the Gaonim. Well, actually that was the other. There was a problem the other way around actually, where a woman would want a divorce and therefore should go to the Goyish courts or whatever. What the reason behind the takana was, I don't know offhand. But whatever, that was one of his takanas. Anyway. That for sure, the poskim. That for sure, it's pretty much the consensus of the poskim that if they've had one child, even if they haven't been mekayim peri v'rivya, then this rule of the mishnah doesn't apply.
What about that famous tshuva in pulling the twine? After 10 years, divorce his wife.
Sorry,
but the photo. You know,
okay.
I have no children, and
okay. Hello.
Remarried.
Okay. It happens, I guess. Okay. So it's Tana Rabbanan. We learn it a price. Person marry a man marries a woman. He stays with her 10 years. She hasn't had any children. Yotzi v'yitzin ksuba. He has to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Why does he have to give her a ksuba? Basically, the Gemara is going to end up saying is because you don't have any reason there's no proof really that the problem that they're not having any children is because of her infertility. It might just as well be his. So you don't have a logical basis to say, like, you know, it's her fault, kind of. So he does have to divorce her or marry another woman because he has to do peri v'rivya. But you can't say it's her fault to the extent that therefore she should forfeit her ksuba.
Necessarily,
right. Because it might be he didn't have the schus to be built up to have children from her. Even though we don't have a clear proof of this, we have a hint to it. By Avram, it says that Avram, after 10 years when they were living in Eretz Canaan and didn't have any children, that's when Sarah suggested to Avram to marry Hagar, and he did. Mad Yishmael. Which teaches you that living in Chutz Lardis does not count. Now, the Rishonim who say, like we said before, that literally this halacha only applies in Eretz Yisrael, or that it only applies if you move to Eretz Yisrael, they prove it based on this line of the Gemara. The other Rishonim who say that no, it applies even if you live in Chutz Lardis, they say Avraham Avinu was a special case. We find that Ramban writes, for example, we find if you look at the timeline of Avraham Avinu's lifetime, He and Sarah came to Eretz Yisrael when Avraham was 70. That's when the Bris Menachem of Sarim happened. Then they left and went back to Haran and stayed there for another 5 years. Then the Ibsha tells them, Lach Lachame Eretz Yisrael, and you go to Eretz Yisrael. So they had already been in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, that's sort of a special case, especially because the Ibsha only told him that the Ibsha only told him, I mean, they gave him a bracha for children only, along with the Lach Lachame Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Chalagogodol, etc. You can't necessarily assume that applies, the Rishonim say, you can't necessarily assume that applies to other people who don't have that specific mitzvah.
Because
the Ibsha told him, yeah. Lepichach, therefore, since it's a matter of that they haven't had children in 10 years, chalahu, if during that 10 years he was sick, oishachaltei, or she was sick, oishneim chavushim abeis asurim, or both of them were in jail, ein olalim in aminyan, then that time does not count towards the 10 years. Because we see, the point is, we look for any possible reason, any possible cause that might have prevented her from getting pregnant. Just like we say that chutzlaretz, that in the case of Avraham Avinu, the fact that he was in chutzlaretz, takes away from it. It doesn't count towards the 10 years because he wasn't destined to have children there. So also we see the same thing if one of them was sick, etc. So Rava asked Rav Nachman, you're telling me we learned 10 years from Avraham Avinu, v'leilaf mi Yitzchak. Why instead don't we learn from Yitzchak? It says Yitzchak was 40 when he married Rivka, and then he was 60 when she gave birth to Yaakov and Esav. So we see he waited 20 years. So why don't we say the cutoff point is 20 years rather than 10?
Did the Mishnah talk about the 10 years
start when, you know, start finish when you, the pregnancy starts, or when the delivery happens?
Well, actually, it's when the pregnancy starts, because we said in the mission, if she miscarries, then you reset the clock, yeah. We see he waited 10 years. Well, the point, no, the, Avraham waited 10 years. Yitzchak waited 20. The point is like this. The point is like this. Given that the Pasuk tells us that Avraham and that when they moved to Eretz Yisrael for the final time, Avraham was 75.
Yeah.
Later on, it says when Hagar gave birth to Ishmael, Avraham was 86. Automatically, we know it was 10 years from until he married Hagar because she immediately became pregnant. Okay, she miscarried at first because of Sarah, but then afterwards, you know, Sarah be your last bane, you're going to become pregnant again, you're going to have a son. So we know automatically it was 10 years. The fact that the Pasuk spells out that it was 10 years in the case Esther Shonim is where we learn 10 years. So the question is, why instead don't we learn from Yitzchak, where we see he waited 20 years? Same difference. The point, the difference is, it's not usual to marry another. It's not usual to marry another wife. The Gemara is going to talk about it actually at the end. The Gemara is going to talk about it at the on Samachay and Aleph, which we'll probably at this rate get to tomorrow. But in principle, he could marry another wife. It's unusual though. And in many cases, I mean, even after Chayim Dremei Negerishim, of course, it's Osir, but even before that, the Reb Ami mentions in the Gemara over there that a person is not allowed to marry another wife, another wife just like that.
But from the example of Yitzchak, that's the point. Didn't marry another wife, and that was for 20 years, so that example is much more potent.
Well, okay. The answer is, Amalei, he answers him. Nachman answers him, Yitzchak Okur Hayo. The difference is, Yitzchak himself was infertile. Question is, Ihachi Avraham Nami Okurhaya. Okay, are you going to go that way? Avraham was also infertile. So in that case, you can't prove anything from Avraham either. The Gemara is going to establish soon, the Gemara is going to point out soon that both Avraham and Sarah were naturally infertile, and Yitzchak and Rivka also. So if you're going to say you can't learn from somebody who was infertile, somebody who's incapable of having children, okay, then you're back to the question, why don't you learn from Yitzchak? Or if we're saying, actually, however you look at it, if you can't learn from Yitzchak, you can't learn from Avraham, and if you could, then you learn from Yitzchak. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting question. Isn't by Yitzchak, wasn't it the situation? We know, I mean, in general, we always learn that Yitzchak married Rivka when she was 3. So, and Rashi says on the pasuk over there, why 20 years? You have to wait 10 years until Bechlal she's capable of having children, until she's 13 and even capable of having children. Then he waited 10 years from that point. So what is the Gemara trying to prove from that? That in general, you should say 20 years. Most people don't marry when the girl is so young. So Tosfos himself says, we mentioned the other day, Tosfos had brought, that actually there's a different medrash that implies that Rivka was 14 when they got married. We discussed that the other day. So Tosfos says, our Gemara may be agreeing with that medrash, which also the other day the Gemara had called her a Naira, which also implies that she was above Bas Mitzvah age. So there you go then. If she was already 14, she was already capable of having children at that time. The fact that they waited 20 years, that's what the Gemara is asking over here.
The one to remember the mother that says that he was married at her 3 years old. What was the first of the marriage if she couldn't have children?
So what? You marry her because she had to be gotten out of that environment of the Sewell's house as soon as possible. But that was the idea. That's one reason why Eliezer had to have Fitz Aderech over there to get there right on that day in order that she doesn't stay there any longer and sink into their trauma. So yeah, you know, she had to be brought there right away and marry Yitzchak. But as far as children, it was going to. Anyway, Marshall has a long discussion of the pros and cons of it. He compares the Gemara over here with what Rashi says on the pasuk over there, and Marshall ends up saying that no, you could even say our Gemara agrees that Rivka was only 3 when they got married. But still, the point would be the fact that the pasuk makes a point of mentioning that they waited 20 years. Okay, in no case it was 10 years to allow her to grow up in 10 years and then 10 years. But still, the fact also that we find he didn't marry a Shifcha. The fact, you know, yeah. Anyway, the answer is. The fact that the pasuk tells us that Yitzchak waited 20 years from when he got married to Rivka until Yaakov and Esav were born is not to teach us about how long it's appropriate to wait, but rather the reason the pasuk tells us that detail is for a different reason. Why does the pasuk at the end of Parashas Chayisara it says that Yishmael lived to be 137? Why do we need to know that information? So Rashi in Megillah, where this Gemara is also brought, says, what do we need to know? B'chol, Yishmael was a Rasha. You don't need to know how long Rasha lived. The Torah Evan discusses over there that Yishmael did Tshuva, but still, okay, you know, he did Tshuva, fine, but still, you don't have to list the length of years that he lived, especially since some of them were the Rasha. Why? In order to tell us the details of Yaakov's life. The Rashi at the end of Parshas told us, gives the whole calculation that we learn from it that the Pasuk is not accounting for 14 years of Yaakov's life. We learn that there was for 14 years that Yaakov spent 14 years in Yeshiva of Shem Ve'ev.
Hey, you don't need to know the life of Rasha. Why would you need to know the life of a tzaddik through the life of a Rasha? What's the chokmah? Why did the Torah doesn't come and tell us directly what...
Okay, it's a question. But the fact is, the Torah is telling us how long Yishmael lived in order that we can learn from it, not how long Yaakov lived, but when various events in his life happened. That he got the brachas when he was 63, he spent 14 years in the Yeshiva of Eber, and then he went to Haran and so on and so forth. And he wasn't punished for the time he was in the Yeshiva Shem Eiva, yeah. So the point is, part of that calculation involves knowing how old Yitzchak was when he married Rivka, and how old he was when he had Yaakov. So therefore, that's why the Pasuk needs to tell us that, not to tell us that 20 years is the appropriate time to wait. No, we learned that from Avraham, 10 years. But rather, we need it for a different purpose. Whereas in the case of Avraham, we didn't need to know it, because the fact itself, the Pasuk tells us, he was 75 when he came to Eretz Yisrael. He was 86 when Yishmael was born. Automatically, we know 10 years there. Going back to what we said, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Yitzchak avinu akur haya. Yitzchak was naturally infertile. Shenema, the pasuk says, Vayetzer Yitzchak l'Hashem l'noichach ishtoi. Yitzchak davened to Hashem opposite his wife. Al ishtoi l'nema. It doesn't say he davened for his wife, as in she's an akara, and he has to daven to have his adventure with children. Ela l'noichach. But opposite, corresponding to. Malamat Shenem akurim haya, which teaches us actually that both of them were infertile. So they're both davening like on an equal level. Rashi says they were each davening for themselves. Marshall says instead that each of them were davening, that each of them were davening for each other. Yeah.
Maybe they didn't know who was.
Well, but we're, the Gemara is telling us here that, yeah. The question is, if so, then why does the Pasuk continue that the Eibishter answered his tefillah, answered their tefillah? So both of them were infertile, both of them needed to be answered. And the answer is the famous answer, the fisha ain't a dream, it's tefillah tzaddik ben tzaddik, let's feel a tzaddik ben Rasha, because you can't compare the tefillah of a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, which is Yitzchak, with the tefillah of a tzaddik ben Rasha, which is Rivka. So yeah, there's many different ways. There's many different ways of explaining it. Among other, Rashi seems to be saying over here at face value, Yitzchak is davening for himself. He's a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Therefore, the Eibishter answered his tefillah. Rivka is a tzaddik ben Rasha, therefore the Eibishter was more willing to answer Yitzchak's tefillah. So now why? Where does the Eibishter play favorites? The one answer Ben Yayadik gives is, we're talking specifically about Piri of Rivia. We learned before, a couple of days ago, that Bnei Bonim Harim Tubanim, grandchildren are considered to a certain extent in halacha like children. Which means, in other words, if Eibishter answers Yitzchak's tefillah, it means not only Yitzchak is going to have a son, it means that Abram now is going to have grandchildren. Whereas on Rivka's side, it means she's going to have children, but it also means that Bethuel is going to have children, is going to have grandchildren, that she can't invoke his chus to go together with hers, so therefore Yitzchak's chus is stronger when you're davening for children.
And you also say that Rivka,
okay, but then the Gemara wouldn't be making the difference between Tzadik and Tzadik with Tzadik and Rasha. It would be a different distinction.
But that's an additional...
Okay. A lot of other different explanations that they say, but one interesting thing where this comes up in halacha in Or Chaim, when it talks about the dinim of who to appoint as a chazan, I think the Magen Avraham brings that other things being equal, you should choose a tzaddik ben tzaddik over a tzaddik ben rasha to be a chazan, based on our Gemara over here. Not everybody agrees with that, and they say, this case over here, we're talking about a special case. We're talking about davening for oneself as opposed to the tzibur. Adadaba, when you're davening for the tzibur, maybe a tzaddik ben Rasha is better because he overcame his upbringing, and then therefore the Eibishter prefers that more.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that too, yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. Om Rabbi Yitzchak, v'pnei ma hoyu avisenu akurim, why indeed were our forefathers infertile, because the Eibishter desires the tefillah of the tzaddikim. He wanted that Yitzchak and Rivka, and previously and after him the other of it, should daven, and the Eibishter appreciates their tefillahs. And in this connection, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Loma nimshal tefillahs and shal tzaddikim ke eser, why is the tefillah of tzaddikim compared to a eser? Over here, Rashi says that an eser is, it's called in English, a winnowing fan. It looks like a big spatula that you use to turn over the grain, to throw it up in the air and then winnow it. In Sukkah, where the Gemara is also brought, Rashi says that it means a pitchfork, and Tosfos says whether that's the correct explanation. Whatever it is, anyway, the word we had over here, vayet ha-yitzchak la-shem, and vayet also lo-yashem. The simple meaning of esser in this connection is a lot of. It actually quotes over there on the pasuk, "Hatarti olai divreichem." But the Gemara is also darshaning that's related to the word esser, meaning a pitchfork. So why is the tefillah of tzaddikim like a pitchfork? Ma esser zem hapach turum amokum lakum, just like a pitchfork turns over the grain from one place to another. Kachtilos and shal tzaddikim ma pechus megayosif shal hakadosh baruch hu v'midas ragzonos l'midas rachmanos. So also the tefillah of tzaddikim turns over the Eibishter's midas from ragzonos, from anger, to rachmanos. Which the idea is, Meforshim say, the reason why the pasuk stresses that in connection over here, specifically in connection with Yitzchak, Yitzchak was from Midas Agrura. So just based on that alone, there would have been an extra measure of Gvura preventing him from having children. So he needs the Vayetzar, his Vayetzar accomplishes more. His Vayetzar turning over from Gvura to Chesed accomplishes more than the Fila, for example, in Avraham, who's already naturally Midas Chesed. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here, Mimidas Ragzonus, Lumidas Rachmanus. Not that Eibishter is now angry yet at Yitzchak and Rivka, but the reason why they were infertile, we just said, because Eibishter wants their tefillahs. But in general, Yitzchak's tefillah coming from Gvura overturns the Eibishter's Ragzonus in other contexts, like for other people. By the way, there's a connect to connect this with this week's parasha also. There's a sicha in Chelik Lamed where they ever talked about the first Rashi in the parasha that Bikish Yaakov Lishe B'Shalva Kapatol of Rug Desho Yosef, that Yaakov wanted to live in peace, and then all of a sudden the whole thing with Yosef blows up. That ever talks about over there in the Sicha. So what's going on over here? It's not like, what is the Abish punishing Yaakov for wanting to live in peace? No, okay. The Abish wanted that Yaakov should be Bikish Lesha B'Shava, just like we're saying over here. The Abish wants the Tfilos and Shatadikim. And then the Abish brought about the Rugzah Shal Yosef, through which eventually Yaakov comes to the ultimate Shalva, first the 17 years in Mitzrayim, and later on the greater Shalva of Elam Hava. So that ever develops the idea over there in the Sicha of this idea, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Misavel L'Tfilos and Shal Tzadikim, that the Eibishter expects us to ask, in Yaakov's case, to ask for Shalva, in our case, to ask for Mashiach, and then and we're expected to keep on asking and keep on nudging the Eibishter about it.
And yet Rashi says that he doesn't have peace in the world.
But in the end, Yaakov did, the last 17 years. Yeah. Amar Abami, Avraham v'Sara Tumtumin Hayu. Avraham and Sarah were both tumtumim. A tumtum, we're going to learn in the next parak more extensively, is somebody who there's a membrane or something covering over their genitals. So like literally, you can't see, you can't tell whether the person is a male or a female. Shenema, the pasuk, and later on when it came time for them to have Yitzchak, the Eibishter made a nest and created or uncovered the relevant parts. Shenema, the pasuk says, Habitual through tzavdem, look to the rock. To the rock that you were carved, v'almakeves boronu kartem, and to the hollow of the pit that you were dug out, which the simple meaning of the pasuk is talking about the Jewish people are like carved out and dug out from Avraham and Sarah respectively because we're descendants from them. The Gemara is dashing in the pasuk that Avraham himself had to be carved out. There had to be an Eva Zachris carved out for him from the tumtum mass of flesh. Similarly with Sarah, there had to be a nukar. There had to be a digging out. To create her the relevant parts where they weren't before. Uchtiv, and the pasuk continues. Who is this tzur and who is this makeves bor? Habitu al Avraham avichem bel sarah tchochem. Look to Avraham, your father, at the sarah who gave birth to you. Meaning that then the second pasuk is explaining the first pasuk. Who is this tzur chutzavtem and who is this makeves bor nukartem? Avraham and sarah respectively. So we see that their respective edvarim actually had to be carved out where they didn't exist before. Amr of Nachman, Amr of Barvua, Sarah Imena Ailonis Haya. Sarah Imena was an Ailonis, which we've had several times. It already means a woman who has certain physical signs showing that she's never going to be, that she's never going to be able to have children. Shenema Vati, Sarah Yakara Ein Lo Vlad. The pasuk says Sarah was barren, she had no, Ein Lo Vlad, the simple meaning is she had no child, but of course if she's Yakara, she doesn't have children. It means, Afilo Base Vlad Ein Lo. She did not even have a place for a child, meaning a womb.
Isn't that a steal when we say also that
she could have been your fast and be an Ilonis? What's the contradiction?
Different,
not necessarily. No, she has certain different bodily features, different necessarily. We're not talking about the face. So I'll tell you. So there's an interesting thing that Sheva Talevi, the Shavuot Shavuot Sheva Talevi, talks about this. He says it doesn't mean that Sarah didn't have a womb at all. If she didn't have a womb, how did she become Nidda? We find that Pirsa Nidda. We find that she was making her the food for the Malachim. All of a sudden, she became Nidda. And the pasuk says, "Chot aliyas v'sara er chanoshim." Long ago, her periods had stopped, implying that sometime in the past she had had them. So what are you talking about? So he says like this: no, if she taka didn't have a womb at all, taka wouldn't be possible for her to become nida. And he mentions this in connection with halacha: a woman who has a hysterectomy, he says, cannot become tami nida anymore. What happened over here when it says ainla base afila base vlad ainla? It means she had an underdeveloped. It had normally a woman, of course, is born with a womb and then it gradually develops and then gets bigger as she grows older, as she reaches puberty. In Sarah's case, it still remained the same size as it was when she was a little girl, so it's still capable of producing nida blood. And therefore, she was able to become nida, but she wasn't able to carry a child until the Eibishter enlarged it and made it to be able to actually carry a vlad. Yeah. Mefarshim talk about a lot, and it's explained in a number of places in Chassidus also why it had to be this way, why the Avos and Imaris had to be Akaris, besides that we said Nisabel and Tfolos and Shazikim, why it had to be that they're Tumtumim, why it had to be that Sardes and Ilonis. It's basically the gist of it is that the creation of the Jewish people had to be something like Yesh Ma'ayim. So it had to be like there's no natural possibility of there being a Jewish people. We don't develop naturally like the regular nations out there. The creation that there's a Jewish people has to be like Yesh Ma'ayin. It has to be there was nothing there and all of a sudden there was the yeah, exactly. Going back to what the Mishnah had said that the 10 years. This is what we're talking about. 10 years only applies in the earlier generations, where people lived a long time, like Abraham Avinu. But in later times, in our times, when people don't live as long, you can't wait 10 years. All you can wait is 2.5 years, which is enough time for 3 potential pregnancies. You have 9 months for pregnancy, a month in between for days of Tumah V'Tahara, so that gets you to 30 months, which is 2.5 years. If the woman hasn't become pregnant in that time, then you have to follow what the Mishnah says: divorce or marry another wife. Rabba Amar of Nachman, Shalosh Shanim. Rabba in the name of Rav Nachman says a little differently. You can wait 3 whole years. Keneged Shalosh Pekidus, corresponding to 3 times when the Eibishter is poiked. We learned in Rosh Hashanah, but Rosh Hashanah, that on Rosh Hashanah, Sarah, Rachel, and Chana were all, the Eibishter was poiked them. The Eibishter remembered and decided that year they're going to have a child. So probably you can wait 3 years until 3 Rosh Hashanahs have passed, and then after that, if it's coming the 4th Rosh Hashanah and she hasn't become pregnant yet, then you have to follow that. Actually, Dalma Mab, Rosh Hashanah Nifkidu Sarah Rachel B'chana. However, Omar Rabba Lasnu Lahani Kloli, but Rabba says, no, those rules that we just said, 2.5 years or 3 years, are not correct. No, it's still 10 years, like it said in the Mishnah. How do we know? Mechti Masnissin Mantakin Rebbe. Who set up the Mishnayas? Who put the Mishnayas into the form that we have them? Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. V'habi made David Imokshani, and Rebbe is descended from David HaMelech. He lived a thousand years after him. And already in David HaMelech's times, people didn't live as long. The people's years were diminished. Yichtiv Yimeshne Sein Ibrahim Shivim Shana. Doesn't kill him. The length of our days, of our years, is 70 years. So already in David HaMelech's time, the average lifespan was 70 years. And yet, 1,000 years later, Rebbe is writing in the Mishnah 10 years. So we see it's still 10 years. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting thing. That pasuk is in Kapitel Tzadik, which is Tefillah LeMoshe. Moshe himself lived to be 120. What's the writing mission? It's Abraham Shem Shana. So Tosfos says, yes, indeed, it is part of Moshe's Tefillah, but it must be that David rewrote that pasuk. It must be that that particular pasuk in it is part of David's Tefillah. Because the Gemara mentions in Bava Basra that David HaMelech wrote Tehillim al Yedei Asaras Kenim, based on the works of 10 previous elders, Adam, Rishon, Moshe, Abraham, the 3 sons of Korach, etc. What it is different. All these different people have written things that David incorporated into Tehillim. He took what they had written or said and re-edited it and then whatever and put it into Tehillim as we have it. So here we have Tefillah LeMoshe, but David took it over and re-edited it and, like, so to speak, updated it for his time. No, that was Yitzchak. No, that was Abraham asked that people should start getting that people should start aging and aging. And what was it? Abraham asked for aging. Yitzchak asked for sickness, and Yaakov asked that a person should be sick before they die. Yeah. Yitzchak asked for Yisurim. That's what it was. Yeah.
What?
Yitzchak asked for Yisurim. That maybe she should bring suffering on people to be mechaper for their averus. And he himself went blind. Yeah. Okay, going back to, we said that the Braisa right after the Mishnah had said that, that after 10 years he either has to remarry or he either has to marry another woman or he has to divorce her. V'hai shemela zochli bonus hemena, we said because he might not have had the schus to be built up to have children from her. The question is why? Maybe the other way around. Maybe it's she who wasn't zochah. You're saying that she gets her ksuba because we can't assume it's her fault. Why? Maybe assume that it is her fault, that she's the one who doesn't have the source to have children from him, and therefore, why should she get her ksuba? The answer is, kivin delay maskada, period verivya, since she does not have a mitzvah, period verivya, loy ma'ansha, she's not going to be punished in that way. If the Eishah is going to choose a way to punish a woman, it's not going to be through failure to have children, because it's not preventing her from doing a mitzvah. Whereas with the man, it is. And therefore, it's more logical to assume that it's his lack of schosim, and therefore he owes her a ksuba. However, the Gemara asked, "Any is that so?" We find that Rabbanan said to Rav Abba Bar Zavda, "Nisivi, it's of oiled bani. You need to get married. You need to get married. You need to have children." But Amalahu, and he tells them, "I was once married. Izakoi havali mekamaisa. If I had been zaycha, I would have had children from my first wife." So the question actually is not on the explanation we just said. The question is actually going back on the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that you didn't have children with your first wife, so you divorced her and marry another one. Here we see Rav Abba Bar Zavda is not doing that. The pastor is his first wife. He divorced his first wife, or she died, whatever. But we don't find he's not marrying a second wife, even though they're urging him to. And the answer is Hasim Dechuli Kamad Hulu Larabanan. There he's pushing him off with an excuse, like we said the other day about Rav Sheshi. Because in fact, Rav Abba Bar Zavda had become infertile from the shiurim of Rav Huna. We said the other day, Rav Huna used to give very long shiurim, and his talmidim were sitting over there. There was a huge crowd over there. The Gemara in Ksubas has an expression that when Rav Huna would finish his shiur, and everybody would get up and then shake out their clothes, there would be a huge dust cloud. The expression was, you could see the dust cloud all the way in Eretz Yisrael. So there's a huge number of people. They were embarrassed to go out in the middle to go to the bathroom. So they're sitting there while they have to go. And eventually that affected their ability to have children. That's how some mafarshim learn. Other mafarshim, I think Tavurus Shor, for example, says no, you can't say that. The fact is, you're not allowed to. Embarrassment or not embarrassment, you're not allowed to hold yourself in that long. It's against halacha. And so he answers that no, what it is they were so fatigued in their learning, they didn't even realize they have to go to the bathroom. Meanwhile, by the time they realize, it's too late. I guess, yeah. So the Gemara tells there's a few of them. Rav Gidol, besides Rav Abba Bar Zavda, Rav Gidol Yakim Apirka de Rav Huna, Rav Gidol also became infertile because of Rav Huna's shiurim, Rav Chelba Yakim Apirka de Rav Huna, Rav Sheshes Yakim Apirka de Rav Huna, and another one, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Achadte Suschinta, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, who was also one of the Talmudim of Rav Huna, was one time seized by a sickness of Suschinta, which Rashi says is a sickness that comes from holding back urine, which can make a person an awker. On the side of it, here it brings from the Aruch, but it means that it was some kind of disease that made his skin turn different colors. But again, whatever it was a consequence of this kind of thing, of holding it in too long. Because there's still a Derech HaTeva out there. You still have to be careful, but you still have to be careful about Derech HaTeva. So, Tal Yub Arzi Debeirav, they suspended him from the beam over there from the central beam in the yeshiva. The Nofak Minei Kahutza Yarka, and there came out of him something like a green palm leaf, like a huge outflow of whatever it was, pus or urine or whatever it was that was causing the problem, and that cured him. They suspended him from the roof or from the beam or whatever over there in order that and then he was able to push it out. Amar of Achav Yaakov Shittin Savi Havena. In fact, there were 60 of us big Tamar Chachamim over there in the yeshiva of Rav Huna. V'chulu Yaakov Mepirka de Rav Huna. All of them became infertile because of Rav Huna's shiurim. Levar Me'ana, except for myself, which I did this thing that we just said. Dekaimi B'Nafshoy Chachma Dechayev Alah. I was able to fulfill in myself what the pasuk says that Chachma enlivens those who have it. In other words, I knew what to do basically, and therefore I was able to save myself. In the case of Abba Bar Zavda, it seems it was after, because that's the reason they said, why don't you get married again? And he said, I didn't even have children with my first wife. But actually, the Gemara mentions in Kedushin that there used to be different minhagim in Eretz Yisrael and in Babel. In Bobville, they used to, if I remember correctly, what it was is in Bobville, they used to get married first and then learn. And in Outisrael, they do the other way around. Yeah. So this is taking place in Bobville. Rabbi Huna's yeshiva was in Bobville, so therefore they would have gotten married first and then gone to learn.
Very understood medicine.
I guess so. Yeah. Okay. Going back to the Mishnah had said Girsha Mutera Suchola, that if the husband divorces his wife because of infertility, then she can marry again. And we said the Mishnah had only mentioned two. He said if husband number one, Reuven, divorced her, then she can marry husband number two, Shimon, and stay with him for 10 years. But then it doesn't go any further. It doesn't say that if he divorces her, she's allowed to marry again. Which implies Shani in Shlishi Loi, which implies only two times is she allowed to do this, not three. Masnis in Mani, Rebbe. He, who would our Mishnah be according to? That would be according to Rebbe. The basic question is, the Gemara is going to be discussing over here, does it take two times or three times to establish a chazakah? All over Shas, we have the concept of a chazakah. And the Gemara is going to mention examples of it as we go through the discussion. Do we say you need... Katlanis we're going to get to now. Wait. So the question is it that two times is enough to establish a chazakah, and therefore the third time is already the chazakah has been established, or is it three and four, respectively? From our Mishnah, it seems two. So we're saying that's according to Rebbe. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Mala Harishin Omes, if a woman made a bris milah for her first son and he died, Sheni Omes, and then her second son and he also died, Shlishi Lai Tomal, then the third one she should not hal, because as the Gemara is going to say soon, evidently there's some kind of problem with his blood. In modern terms, he has hemophilia or something like that, but it's not clotting properly. Divrei Rebbe, that's what Rebbe says, that once you have two times already, then the third time you don't do the bris milah. So two times is enough to establish a chazakah. Rav Shimon Gamliel, I'm a shlishi tomel, Rebbe Eloi tomel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, the third one, she can still do a bris milah. The chazakah has not been established yet, it might have been a fluke. The fourth time already, if there's a fourth child already, then you shouldn't. So Mepharshim say the point is, since the Gemara is going to point out soon that this kind of thing tends to run in the mother's family, and if it's hemophilia, then yes, it hemophilia is usually carried by women and actually affects only men because it's on the X chromosome, so the woman gives it to the child, but a boy has an X and a Y, so there's nothing corresponding to it, where the woman is usually protected by her other X. So therefore, the expression tumul. The expression mala and tomel to hint at the Braisa is hinting at this idea that it runs in the mother's family. Mind you, in Shulchan Aruch it does say that this that we're going to talk about soon, this that we're talking about, this whole idea of two or three times respectively, you should be choshesh, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you should be choshesh if a father also has had two or three, as the case may be, children die of bris milah, that you shouldn't do the next one also. And again, you know, based on modern medicine, you can understand that as well. There are different kinds of hemophilia. Some of them are on the X chromosome, so they're carried by women and affect only men. But then you have other kinds. You have another kind, which apparently, from what I read on Wikipedia, is common among Ashkenazim, which affects both, which can be carried equally by both men and women.
And therefore, if that's not a medicine diagnosis for the second time, or...
Ah, well, then there's no question, right? I mean, we're talking about even Chazakah. This is before that it had modern medicine, right? Nowadays, that we have modern medicine, right? If you were told when the baby's born that he has hemophilia, then yeah, you're not going to make him a bris. You're going to wait until either, I mean, some of us say you may never be able to give him a bris. Some say, the Rambam just puts it in terms of you have to wait till he gets stronger. I mean, what would they do in modern terms? In modern medicine, they'd probably give him a little bit of the missing factor or whatever, so his blood will clot, and then they'll be able to do the bris. Okay, V'hatanya Ibcha, the Gemara asked, but we have a braisa that says the other way around, that Rav Shimon Gamliel says two is enough, and Rebbe says three. So now we have the question, Hey Minayu, Achar Naisa, which one is the last braisa? Evidently, you have two braisas that say opposite things. It must be evidently Rebbe first held one way and then changed his mind, and Rav Shimon Gamliel first held one way and then changed his mind. Which braisa represents their final opinion? Tashma, the Amr of Chiba Abraham Abiechen, Maisa Ba'Abra Achayis V'Tzipori. It happened with four sisters in Tzipori. Shemola Rishoy Neomes, the first sister made a bris for her son and he died. Shni Omes, the second sister also did and he died. Shlishus Omes. Revius Bas Lefnei Reb Shimon Gamliel. By the fourth sister came to Reb Shimon Gamliel to ask him what to do. Amala Al Tamuli, and he told her, don't mala. Evidently, the point is, we see that Reb Shimon Gamliel holds three times you need to establish a chazakah. So if the third sister had come to him, he would have still said, go ahead and do the bris. So you don't know necessarily that it's a given that it runs in your family. Only the fourth one did he say it.
But he says she went to him. He didn't say...
Ah, that's the point. Vidilma, he asked your shlishis nami hava amala. Why? Who says? Maybe it just it so happens only the fourth one came to him. Had the third one come to him, maybe he also would have said not. The answer is... Well, if that's the case, then what's the point? What's the point of Rav Chiya bar Abba telling this story? Obviously, we know you need. Obviously, we know there comes a point when you say, "Don't do any more brisin because it's going to be dangerous." And by the way, we see from this, the Gemara started saying that's talking about two or three boys from the same woman. Here we see it also applies to sisters. Where it's one sister after another for the same reason, because if they're carrying a gene for hemophilia, then they're all going to be carrying it.
Right.
No, but that's the point. The Gemara is asking, on the face of it, if Reb Shimon Gamliel held that even after two times is enough for a chazaka, then what's the point of mentioning it? We know, obviously, by the time of the fourth one, he's going to say stop. The whole point, the lechora, why he's mentioning davka the fourth, is to imply, had it been the third one, Reb Shimon Gamliel would have told her, go ahead. The answer is, the Gemara says back, says who? The Dilma HaKamashmol and Dachoy is Machaskis. Maybe that's the chiddush of the story. But without the story, we'd only know that it applies to the sons of one woman. Now we know that it also applies to sisters. So you can't prove from the story whether it happens after two or three. So the Gemara interjects a minute. Amar Rava, Hashta de Amar Tachoyes Machazkas, based on this that we're saying that you can have a chazaka based on sisters as well, then Lo Yisa Adam Isha Loim Mishpachas Nichbin Veloim Mishpachas Mitzrayim, then a man should not marry a woman who's from a family of epileptics or a family of people that Saras runs in their family. For the same reason, he might end up having children like that.
We mean Saras like it was.
Not necessarily Saras as in the kind that is described, just some kind of skin disease, yeah. This is only if there's actually been a chazaka of it three times in the family. Same idea. Okay, going back to this question about two verses three, my havyala, what's the bottom line? What does Rebbe hold? What does Rebbe Shimon Gamliel hold? So, he also Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef Amar, when Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he reported like this, Uvda hava kamei de Rabbi Yechanan, it happened, there was a story that happened in front of Rabbi Yechanan, Biknishta de Moin, in the shul of Moin, is the name of a place, we have a Kippurim Shechali Yisrael Shabbos, and it was on Yom Kippur, which came out on Shabbos, Umol Rishon Omes, this woman had made a bris for her first son, he died, Shli Omes, the second one, and he also died, either it was the same woman, or it was two sisters, whatever it was, Shlishis Baal Afanav, the third time, or the third sister, came to Rabbi Yechanan to ask what to do, Amol Alechiyu Moli, and he tells her, go Mala. Now, what do we see from that? Before we were saying that, we see like this. Before we were saying before we had Reb Chiya bar Abba quoting in the name of Reb Yechanan, the story that happened with Reb Shimon Gamliel. Now, Reb Shimon Gamliel was a Tana. Reb Yechanan is one of the Amoraim. Which means, why were we trying to prove that if Reb Yochanan is telling the story with the four sisters, evidently it must have happened towards the end of Reb Shimon Gamliel's lifetime. So therefore, he would be the one who said three. But we said we can't prove that because maybe the chiddush of that story is about the three is about that it's sisters and not just the same woman. Now we're bringing another story involving Reb Yochanan, where we see that he says that after two times he says that's not enough for a chazaka yet. You need three times. So therefore, that goes to show that, so therefore, it does fit with the story before. It means, in other words, that Rabbi Yechanan really is saying Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the one who says three times. And therefore, so that's that Rabbi Yechanan is relying on that. And that's what Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef is reporting. So we see from that, then, that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds three times. Rabbi is the one who holds two times. Amalei Abaya, so when Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef says this, he came to Bavel and told over the story. Abaya tells him, Chazi, take a look over here. Dekasharis is sort of a sakanta. I hope you're really telling over the story accurately, he tells him, because otherwise you're being master a matter of isur and a matter of sakana. Because what are you saying? If you're saying that the halacha is that it takes three times to establish a chazaka, meaning this third woman or this third son, a bris could be done, it means, first of all, you said it was on Shabbos Yom Kippur. So it means if we were to do that, and really it turns out it was the wrong thing to do, then you've been Mechal Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Number two, it's a matter of danger, the child may end up dying.
Well, then you can say the first one, then is after the first one.
After the first one, no Chazaka isn't established yet. I mean, no,
still Sakana.
No, but come on, there's always a slight Sakana in Bris Mila, but, you know, the Ebishter gives us a mitzvah, you do it. But once the Sakana has been established, that's different. Sabaya is telling Rabbi Yitzchok by Yosef, you better be sure that you're reporting this accurately. Otherwise, you're going to have cases like this where the third time we're going to go tell them, do the Bris Milah, and it's going to end up being a Sakana, and you also end up with Shabbos Yom Kippur. You're going to be Mechalel Shabbos. Oh, that's why you put Isura first. Oh, okay. So why is he putting Sakanta last? I don't know. Because Isura you have only some of the time, and Sakanta you have all the time. Maybe I don't know. However, apparently Rabbi Yitzchok bar Yosef told him, "Yes, I'm certain of what I said." Therefore, some halal Abaya, Abaya relied on that. But other nosfal choyma brati de isi breder of Yitzchok breder of Yehuda. So Abaya went and married choyma, the daughter of Isi, the son of Rabbi Yitzchok, the son of Rabbi Yehuda. So this Choyma then was Rabbi Yehuda's great-granddaughter. And this Choyma had previously been married twice. The Nasva Rachva, the Pumbedisa of Shachiv. First, Rachva from Pumbedisa had been married to her, and he passed away. Rabbi Yitzchok created Rabbi Babachon of Shachiv, and then Rabbi Yitzchok, the son of Rabbi Babachon, had also been married to her, and he passed away. The Nasva who? And Abaya went and married her, because he figured, based on Rabbi Yitzchok by Yosef's report, you see it takes three times to establish a Chazakah. Only two of her husbands have died. No Chazakah yet. So I feel free to marry her.
Meet a third one.
The Shachiv, and he passed away.
Rava said,
How could anybody rely and do such a thing for himself and put himself in danger? And you're doing it based on Rav Yitzchok by Yosef's report. You can't necessarily rely on him. You yourself, Abaya, you yourself previously said, Ovin is reliable, Ovin meaning Ravin. We find often in the Gemara, also Ravin, he would report something from Eretz Yisrael. Ovin is reliable. Yitzchok Sumka, Yitzchok the Red, which I guess was Yitzchok by Yosef's name, a nickname, maybe he had red hair, I don't know. Lagba Samcha, Sumka is red, yeah. Lagba Samcha is not so reliable. So how could you rely on a report from somebody who you yourself say is not so reliable and do such a thing? Why is that? Ovin Yeshne B'chazara, Yitzchok Sumcha Einim Achazara, because Ovin regularly reviews over his learning. Yitzchok Sumcha does not. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is Ravin was always around when Rabbi Yochanan is teaching. Sometimes it happens, we've had before, that an Amorah teaches something and later on he changes his mind. Ravin would always be around there, so if Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind, Ravin would be around to know about it. Rabbi Yitzchok was not. So therefore, you can rely on Ravin, you can't necessarily rely on Rabbi Yitzchok. What if Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind? And Rabbi Yitzchok didn't know about it. So therefore, Rava is saying about Abaya, you shouldn't have relied on his report to go and marry Choyma. Actually, by the way, it's the Mefarshim discussed the question, if a person is going to marry this woman called a Kaplonis, do we force him to divorce her? Do we force him to divorce her? That's the question, is it two or three times? But based from our Gemara over here, From our Gemara over here, it seems to come out that you don't have to force him to, because Rava was criticizing Abaya. How could you put yourself in danger to marry her? But he doesn't say, "Come, let's bring it to Beis Din and force you to divorce her." So many of the Rishonim say that goes to show you don't force him to divorce. So you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't put yourself in sakana. But if you did, you don't have to divorce. On the other hand, the Rosh says you do. The Rosh says you do force them to divorce because the person's putting himself in danger. That's the Gemara is going to discuss soon, whether it's a matter of mazel or what. Yeah. And furthermore, Rava says, "Ema de pligil inin mila." Yes, you find that Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel disagree as far as mila, whether you need two or three times to establish a chazaka. B'nisuin b'pligi. Do they necessarily have the same argument by nisuin? Maybe everybody would agree when it comes to nisuin, you need only twice. By the way, what do we mean by nisuin over here? Are we talking about what it said in our Mishnah about the 10 years and 10 years, or are we talking about what we're talking about now as far as a kaplanis? Different mafarshim. Anyway, the answer is ain. Yes, indeed, they have the same machlokas when it comes to nisuin. V'atanya, and thus we learn in a brisa, nisis l'rishon umeis, l'sheni umeis, l'shlishi l'tinas. If she's married to one man and he dies, and then to another man and he dies, then she's not allowed to marry a third. Divrei Rebbe. Reb Shimon Gamliel, l'shlishi tinas, l'ravi l'tinas. Whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel says she's allowed to marry a third, she's not allowed to marry the fourth one. So therefore, yes, you see, they have the same argument. So the Gemara asks, "Bishleima gavim mila." I can understand how a chazaka by mila could work, how it could happen once you have that one of a woman or two or three or whatever a woman's children have died because of mila or two or three sisters or whatever. I can understand how it keeps on going. Ikemishpacha de rafidama, because you have some families where the blood is weak, like it doesn't clot properly. The ikkah mishpacha, the kamit dama, and then you have other families where the blood is where the blood is stiff, like it clots more easily. But I can understand why hemophilia runs in families. Ellen is suing my time. What would be the logic to say that if a woman has been married more than twice or three times, that she can't marry anymore? What's the possible mechanism that could cause her husband to die? It's her Mayan, meaning her womb, not womb really, but her intestine, whatever, that part of her body that causes it. Meaning, in other words, it could be that like she's a carrier of some kind of disease. When she's a carrier of some kind of disease, when her husband has relations with her, then it gets into his body and then and kills him. Vidavashi on a mazel gurdum, whereas Ravashi says, no, it's her mazel that causes it. Meaning, as Mefarshim say, it means, in other words, the Eibishter may have decided. We learned a few times already. We learned in Megillah and in Tainis that boni chayu mazoni are things that are totally in mazel. This comes under the heading of mazoni. This comes under the heading of mazonis. The Eibishter may have decided she's not going to get mazonis from her husband. Therefore, her husband's going to die, and she's not going to be supported by him anymore. I think the Noda Behuda says based on that, that means therefore if she's independently wealthy, then maybe this concept wouldn't apply, because then you can't say that she's not destined to have mizonis from her husband. Something about my benayu. What's the practical difference? The answer is ikka benayu de ir so mis. One nakamina would be what if the last husband or each one of the husbands or whatever only got engaged to her, only did kedushin with her, and then he died. They haven't had relations yet, so it can't possibly be mayan, but it could be mazel. Inami dinafal mediklo mis. Or another possibility: what if he died in an accident? What if he fell off a tree and died? Again, you can't say he died because of any sickness that had to do with her, but it is a matter of mazel. Rabbi's son Rabbi Yosef tells him, by me name Rabbi Yosef, I once asked Rabbi Yosef, halacha ke Rebbe? Is the halacha like Rebbe? That in the end we said that Rebbe says two times is enough for a chazaka. And he said yes. Then another time I asked him, halacha ke Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? And another time I asked him if halacha like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and he also told me yes. Achuchi achach me. It sounds like he's joking with me. Or Tosfos says it's not necessarily that he asked him at different times. If he asked him at the same time, is the halacha like Rebbe or like Rav Shimon Gamliel? And Rabbi Yosef told him both. What is it? Sounds like a joke. No, because it could, according to Rashi's explanation, it could be like one time he asked him, and then another time he didn't remember that he had asked him, and he asked him again. But actually, what the Gemara is going to say is actually he was asking him in different circumstances. Amalei, so Rava tells him, Loi, stami hi. It's a matter of there's different stam mishness all over Shas. There's different stam mishness, some according to Rebbe, some according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Or Poshet Lecha, and he answered you as follows. Nisuin Malkius to Rebbe. When it comes to marriages and when it comes to Malkius, then we say two times like Rebbe. Vestis, Vesher Amur to Rav Shimon Gamliel. When it comes to Vestis, to setting up a vest, and when it comes to Sher Amur, then we say three times like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Vestis is figuring out when a woman is likely to have her next period. We'll get to it in a minute. Nisuin hodamara. Nisuin is what we talked about, the matter of Katlanis and the matter of our Mishnah about the 10 years and 10 years. Malkius, where do we see in Malkius that there's a Mishnah like Rebbe that says the two times is enough? It's not. We learn a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Misha Loka Bashana, if somebody got Malkus and then again he got Malkus for the same Avera, then if he does the same thing a third time, based in Koin Sinoitz Lekitma, then based in puts him into a cell. At that point, already he has a chazaka of being a Rasha, and like he's not even afraid of the Malkus anymore. So therefore, we need something more drastic. We put him in a cell, or Ma'achilonois is Sodom, and they give him barley to eat. It was in Rambam, Shlesha Prakim, a week or so ago. Agitate Kresin of Kaf until his stomach bursts open. From barley. Eating too much barley is bad. Barley is generally animal food. It's not really good for people. So we see, therefore, that two times, because we're saying basically he's an incorrigible Rasha. If I remember correctly, the Rambam says that they do that only for a Ritzeach, but I'm not sure about that. So there we see that two times is enough. Vestis Titznan, where do we see in the matter of Vestis? Yeah, Titznan, we learn in a Mishnah. A woman's vest is not established until it's been as a vest kavua, until it's been established three times. And if she has a vest kavua, it doesn't get uprooted until it's been uprooted three times. I don't want to get too far into it because it's a long topic, but basically, for example, nowadays most women don't have a vest kavua anyway, but to take a simple example, let's say a woman has had her first period started on Aleph Nissen, the next one Aleph Iyar, the next one Aleph Sivan, then now she has a chazaka that her vest is going to be on Aleph of every month. And from then on, it's considered that, and that's considered her vest kavua, which is negeya for various halachas. Her husband has to separate from her shortly before that time. We don't consider that there's a chash that she may have become nidda before that, etc. If then what happens the next month instead of listen to Iyar Sivan, we said what happens comes Aleph Tammuz and nothing. She still has to look forward to Aleph Av. Aleph Av comes, still nothing. She still has to look forward to Aleph Elul. Only when Aleph Elul comes and still nothing, then that vest has been uprooted. Now she's not. Now Aleph is not her vest kavua anymore. So we see, therefore, the mission says three times. That's like Rav Shimon Gamliel. V'shor amur, and where do we see by the matter of v'shor amur? It's not. Ein asher nas amur. Ad she'ir by shlosh pamim. An ox does not become moored, where then you have to pay nezek shalom for it until it's been warned, until the owner has been warned about it three times. That particular one, actually, Tosfos points out, even Rebbe agrees in that case, because it's actually a pasuk that implies that it's three times. Just Reb Shimon Gamliel says that that's a general rule, and Rebbe says that one's a special case, but ordinarily it's two times.
Why is it done?
Ordinarily, he says it's two times. He says that by the time you reach the third time, then yeah.